Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the next class on entrepreneurship and business planning. My name is Mark Giuliano, and I'm an adjunct professor at Carnegie Mellon University. If this is your first time listening to the recording, or even live, I do recommend strongly that you go ahead and listen to episode one of this class, which details all of the topics we'll be covering, as well as my personal background, as well as there's some companion websites and things like that. And let me say that if you are listening to the recorded version of this, that on my website there are some PowerPoint slides, which generally go up within a day or so of the actual recording. And that website is www.talkshoe.com/Professor Giuliano. Okay, let's get started with our next topic. And this is class number 7, and we're going to talk about a target market. First thing I have to say is many of you may be saying, what do you mean by market? And believe me, a lot of people have difficulty with that concept. Now, when I say market, I don't mean marketing, okay? We'll talk about that plenty over the rest of this course. And again, this course is being taught basically at the same time, give or take a week, as the my class at Carnegie Mellon University that I'm teaching live. So target market, what we mean by that is the sort of collection of people who will buy your product. So when people will say to you last year, there were, and I'm going to make up a number here, there were 500 million cell phones sold, that is the market for cell phones, the total market for that particular product. Now, markets can also be very small. And again, I often use the example of restaurants in my classes because people can understand them. And the market for a restaurant might be what's the total available sales, if you will, or revenues of all the restaurants in my particular area. That could be the available market that I'm selling into. And then obviously my goal is to get some percentage of that market that I would sell to. So in terms of figuring out the target market, these are the people who I'm going after, you're answering the following questions. Who will buy your product? Who specifically will buy your product? Okay, this is very important. It isn't, people will say, well, I'm after, selling a product to men and women under the age of 60. Well, that's absurd. There's too many people. You have to segment, and we'll talk a lot about segmentation today, that market. But really think, who is going to buy your product? Who has the most pain or gain? And as I said in a prior class, pain is more important. If you can really solve a pain that someone has, for example, something is very expensive that they do and you can make it a lot cheaper, that is serious pain. Gain tends to mean how can I improve, say, my company. So if you buy my software product, you'll be able to double your profits. That's the example of a gain, as opposed to you'll be able to lose less customers. Right, that's pain. Or your network won't have as many security breaches. That's pain. Okay, so you want to answer that question. You also want to look at who is the most likely first target. Okay, because too often companies think of their eventual market, and they forget who are the people who are going to buy right now. And let me give you an example of that from one of the companies I work for, a company called Four Systems, a little esoteric for some people. It's high-end telecommunications equipment, really bleeding edge. This was 15 years ago when we first came out. It's very high-speed technology. And when if you read reports from financial analysts or guys like Yankee Group or Gartner Group, they were talking about the market as the Fortune 500, as the businesses who would buy the market. And that was a significant mistake, okay? And the reason for that is that those weren't people who were going to buy right now. The people who were going to buy right now were the government and the universities doing research, advanced research in high-speed technology. So that was the market we went after at the beginning, okay? And then obviously we went after the bigger market over time. So again, you want to answer the question, which is how big is this market? Meaning, what is the size of it in terms of the number of customers? What's the size of it in terms of the amount of revenues or sales? And then when I figure out the total market, I'm then going to figure out my piece of that particular market. And you need to really define the characteristics of these buyers. You can't just, again, say, you know, males and females under the age of whatever, you know, 30, or students who attend college. It's just not good enough. You have to pick a group that is similar to one another. Students in college is just too broad. Let me give you an example of that. Here's an example of a target market. Students in the top quartile of grades who are in engineering programs at top private universities in the West Coast. Okay, that is a very definable market. We can figure out the engineering schools. We can figure out the students who are getting better grades, or maybe we can't figure out their names, but we could target them. West Coast is pretty obvious. I said U.S. universities. So again, you're segmenting your market, and the key to success is to, quote, own a market, meaning to have a significant percent of the sales in that market. So let's stick with this right now. Let's assume, for example, that of this particular market, and I was selling pocket protectors. Okay, that's always a good one for engineering students. Pocket protectors, for those of you who are younger, are these little things you stick in your breast pocket, and you put your pens in so that the ink doesn't get all over your shirt. Okay, or if you want, say, calculators in the back of your mind. Great. So it would be a lot better, frankly, if I owned 40% of this top quartile students on the West Coast in U.S. universities than if I owned 0.1% of all of the universities in the world. Because of all of the universities in the world, if I'm just an insignificant drop, I can't make a profit. There's too many other companies that are going to dominate that market that are basically going to be dictating to me what to do. So it's much better to start with a definable market that's frankly smaller and then grow that market. Now, that directly leads into the concept of segmentation. Segmentation is by far the most important thing that you will do in your company in terms of figuring out who your customers are. There's lots of different ways to segment. Let me give you some example. First, most obvious one, geography. I sell to the United States. That's pretty straightforward. Or I sell to English-speaking countries in the world. Or I sell to my local area, just my city. There's many businesses, obviously, professional businesses, for example, who just sell locally. Okay. The second is by industry, meaning that my customers are in a certain industry. For example, my customers could be doctors who reside in hospitals. Okay, that's an industry, the medical industry, the hospital industry. So, and then again, many other examples of industries. I sell to the steel industry. And again, that's a pretty rotten segmentation, but it's one slice. It might be the steel industry, you know, in Pittsburgh, in steel mills, et cetera. So we're going to segment it down. The third one is an application. Let's stick with the doctor example. I might sell MRI imaging equipment to doctors in hospitals. So the application of my technology is MRI. Okay, so that's what I sell, let's say, a piece of software that assists in MRI. That's the application for it. The other obvious one for application is computer software. So I'm a database management software company. Okay, that's an application. One that's extremely important is business versus consumer. In the internet world, this is called B2B, business to business, or B2C, business to consumer. Businesses and consumers act very, very differently. If you think of yourself, and if you're a business person, and you think of the things you buy in your business, you probably have different types of products that you buy for your home. For example, you might buy a laptop for your business because you travel, and you might be willing to spend $3,000 or $4,000 because you need to show some fancy video clips in terms of what you use it for. But at home, you might buy the $500 one that just has a few pieces of software. You're more concerned with accessing the internet and doing IM and some other basics, and you don't need all the horsepower. You don't need the mobility. So again, they're very, very different. If you go to, say, a Dell site, sticking with computers, one of the first things that Dell Computers asks you on their homepage is, are you a business or are you an individual? And then they even further segment, are you a small business versus a large business, et cetera. Again, businesses and consumers are very different in the way they buy, and most companies cannot sell to both parties. Selling to business typically means a sort of what they call a high-touch model. You've got to have direct sales. It might be over the telephone or over the internet, but you're touching your customer directly. Whereas consumers, you can't touch each individual person. It's too expensive. So you have to not have lots and lots of salespeople, but instead you want to have things that leverage to consumers, like a website where you can sell, and one website can sell to millions of consumers. So that's another key segmentation. A high-end versus low-end. You think of McDonald's versus, you know, your favorite Italian restaurant. I mean, they're targeting completely different people. Okay? You know, so that's another. And there's nothing wrong with targeting low-end. There's nothing wrong with saying that you're the low-end, cheaper, less quality product, because people buy a lot of times the low-end, you know, least quality product. Now, on the other hand, you may want to be the Mercedes. Okay, so you can be the Subaru, or probably more the Kia would be a better example these days, or you could be the Mercedes or BMW. Each has its own market. And there are dozens and dozens of other ways to segment. Let me give you an example, and I need to give you a brief description of this company. This is a company I worked for years ago called Islip Media. And what Islip Media did was it sold a video search engine, basically. So it could go inside a video, and it could search the words in the video by using speech recognition and face matching and image matching and things like that. So we had to determine who would be the customers. Now, unfortunately, it wasn't the days of YouTube. This was the days where media was all generated by big media companies. Okay, so one of our first segmentations there was the business market, this is by industry, the business or corporate, the entertainment industry, the government, which was an industry in and of itself, and education. So those were four main industries. We further segmented entertainment into news, broadcasting, sports, and film. Again, we're talking about video. So what we said was to target our search engine product for news would be very different than targeting it for full-length feature film. Okay, so those were all the choices. What we did was we actually crossed out the business and corporate market. That mostly had to do with training videos, and we didn't feel there was a large enough market there for us. We also crossed out education because for a similar reason. They're just the willingness to pay and the ability for those people to pay. Our software was, you know, probably in the $50,000 to $100,000 range. It was not going to be something that they could afford. The government, we just didn't feel we had the contacts, and again, the applications weren't right. So we chose the entertainment industry. Now, with the further segmentation, we're talking about people searching inside of videos and then playing the videos. Well, inside of entertainment, we ruled out feature films because we said that's not what people want to do. They don't want to just play a clip when certain words were said, or a certain face is on the screen. Whereas in news, clearly there is the ability to search video within the news, let's say CNN, and then play the video from there. So with all that industry segmentation, we chose entertainment and a sub-segment, which was news, broadcasting, and sports. The second thing we did was we segmented by application. In this case, so for each of these different industries, there were different applications. There was what we called real-time application. What that meant was the instantaneous searching of video. Okay, and obviously something like news, you'd want to search it right away. Whereas something like a broadcast, let's say a show on History Channel would clearly be different than a news station. The second application was archiving. This was to take large quantities of archives that were on video out of the archives, what they call index them, so they could be searched. Then there was training, and then there was the Internet. We ruled out archiving because in talking to people, it was pretty obvious that people weren't going to take, as they say in the industry, film out of the can, literally take these films or tapes out of their libraries and spend all this time and energy to index them. So we ruled that out. Real time made a heck of a lot of sense because there was lots and lots of video being generated literally by the second by TV stations and news stations, and people would want to search that and play video. The Internet was also another one that seemed to make a lot of sense to us as an application because video back then was really just starting on the Internet, but people were putting video clips on the web, and the ability to search them was very important. Training was one that we actually ruled out, and that, again, it was a good application in terms of usage of our technology. There just wasn't enough money to be made in the training business at that particular time. So, again, segmented to entertainment, then news, broadcasting, and sports. Within that, real-time and Internet. So that was our segment in terms of our target customers. Now, another way to segment the market and really almost even describe a market is what's called the adoption curve. And adoption curves are, some people might have heard the term S-curve. And basically, if you draw an S going up and to the right, you will see that it starts slow, then curves up, then gets very steep, and then tails off. And actually, the S eventually goes down, but let's not worry about the declining phase. Let's assume that the market is growing. So there are different types of people you're going to target. In the very beginning of that curve, people call them early adopters or pioneers. What these people care about is just getting the product. These are the crazy people who spent, $20,000 for an HDTV 10 years ago. They had to have it. Okay, these are the guys, you know them. They're the gadget guys, right? They got to have it. They got to have everything. Got to have the $500 cell phone. They got to have, the $10,000 TV. They got to have the best stereo equipment, et cetera. They're early adopters of new technology. So the next phase of that market is what's called the major market, but still the pioneers. These are where the growth phase happens. This is where people, it's catching on, okay? Let's use the cell phone market as an example for this. People remember back in the early days of cell phones, and even if you don't, it's kind of a good story. A cell phone actually had a big pack with it, like a mini briefcase that you had to carry along for power, to power the cell phone. I mean, this was seriously heavy. It was expensive. Cell phone service was incredibly expensive. I mean, you could easily get $500 phone bills per month back in the early days. But you'd say to yourself, well, what idiot would buy it then? Well, there were some idiots that it made a lot of sense. For example, salespeople who were on the road all day. They were willing to pay the $1,000 for the phone and the $500 per month for the service because it really generated money in their business to be accessible all the time. Other people who bought them, rich guys, right? So wealthy men and women said, hey, I want a cell phone. I want mobility, and I'm willing to pay for it. Those are classic early adopters. The second phase, or the growth phase, the major market, these are people who pretty much bought cell phones from maybe, I would say the early 90s, mid-90s to probably the early 2000s. That period in there where, it made sense. I mean, prices came down. I don't have to be a sales guy. I could just be anybody who's on the move. I could be clearly someone who, I want to give something to my kids to have. These are people who clearly want to have the mobility. They buy into it. The market's going like crazy. There's millions of choices, very competitive market, pricing deals all over the place. This is really the huge growth phase of the market. The the late adopters are really laggards. This is defined by market maturity, tons of price competition, and think of today. You know, you can't move down the road without seeing a billboard or listen to the radio or watch television without some kind of guy trying to shove a cell phone at you for, you know, free or fixed rate plans or nights and weekends or every possible combination you can think of to make cell phone service cheaper. These are late adopters. These are your grandma, okay, who doesn't care about being mobile. She sits in her house a lot, okay, but now she needs a cell phone because everyone's got a cell phone, okay, and maybe even bought it for her as a gift. And maybe when she does, move around, you want her to have a cell phone because of safety. She might want to have to call you, say your grandmother, you know, is having problems or some such thing. So that's the idea of a growth curve. One thing I just want to spend a little time on is these early adopters. Early adopters are very, very important. These are the people who are going to try your product at the beginning. So the product that I'm selling right now, I obviously work for TalkShoe, as I've said many times, and we're selling interactive podcasts. Well, most of my friends don't even know what a podcast is. And if they did know what a podcast, they certainly don't know what it means to be interactive and be talking to people and making recordings. So the early adopters in our case are podcasters. These are people who've been doing it. They're people who like new technology. They're the kind of people who bought, you know, their iPods in the early days, who spent a lot of time on iTunes. These are the kind of customers that we're currently looking for. In the telecommunications industry, when I was there, I mentioned early adopters were people like research labs, universities, military, government agencies, etc. And it also turns out, by the way, if you're selling to companies even, that there are some people who are early adopters. Walt Disney is a company that tends to adopt new technology very early, which is why they've always been ahead of the game in terms of their feature animation films. Okay, so let's turn to the size of the market. So we figured out the market we're going after. Now we have to figure out how big it is, how many customers there are, and the revenues from that market. Now again, not the overall market, all right? Not the overall market, but your segmentation of the market. Okay, a good example of this is Cricket phones. Cricket sold a fixed rate plan, or still does, I assume, for cities, for local calling. So they were trying to get a piece of the worldwide market in cell phones. They were trying to get a piece of the local calling market. Okay, so that was their target. And they targeted people who live in the area, who don't travel, who basically call people within their current area. So that was their market. You then want to define the buyer characteristics of that market. So maybe Cricket, again, I don't know Cricket specifically. If I were them, I would be targeting people, probably mothers who stay at home, who tend not to travel as much out of the area. I'd be targeting kids who want to call their families and local, and probably their parents don't even want them to call long distance. So my target, those would be the characteristics of those type of people. Now, there's two ways you typically make revenue or sales projections or market projections. There's the top-down and the bottom-up. It's important that you use both of these. You can't just do top-down. You can't just do bottom-up. Okay, so let's explain what this means. Top-down marketing means you start from the big market and you work your way down. So using that cell phone example, it's pretty easy to find out what the worldwide sales of cell phone service is. That's pretty straightforward. Then you'd want to go down perhaps to what is the market for the United States cell phone market. And if you were Cricket, you might want to go down to the market that are the local calling. You might even further segment and say, you know, we don't want to launch the service nationally. We first want to launch it on the East Coast. So we'd work our way down. Then we'd say, of all the cell phone business in these areas, let's say the East Coast of the United States, top 10 cities, what is the market share? What is the percentage of that market that I could realistically get? Okay, let's assume I say I think that it's reasonable to get 10% of that market. So you see, I'm working my way down, and that tells me what my top line will be. Now be careful. Don't say the first year you're going to get 10% of the market. Maybe in year two or three, you're going to work yourself up to 10%, and that's a reasonable expectation. Where do you get this kind of data? You can do internet research, which is very, very common. There's all sorts of information and data you can find on the internet. You know, it's amazing. I mean, what I used to pay thousands and thousands of dollars for as a marketing person, you know, is now a few clicks away in terms of the market data. Analysts and consultants, these are people who follow the market. These are people you may have heard of, like the Gartner Groups, the Yankee Groups, the IDCs. These are guys who do numbers for a living and look at markets and look at trends and things like that. There's also many, many niche firms and consulting firms that look at specific markets. It is probable that you might have to pay for some of this data. Okay. Other sources, the government. So if you were looking at, back to my example of a small business or a restaurant business in your local city, you can go into the libraries, the government libraries basically, and get or request data on your specific local area. You can look at it by industry, how much people spend, averages, you know, all sorts of things. I mean, you can literally find, I had a group do a restaurant business plan that I reviewed, and they went and they found it down to the, you know, segment of Pittsburgh in terms of the amount of restaurant revenues. You can do a direct research. What that means is direct, say, market research. Let's say, again, I was targeting universities, my example of top universities with engineering students that I mentioned. Well, Carnegie Mellon is here. That's a top university. They got a big engineering program. I could stand on the corner of one of the square and or the hub, and I could hand out some surveys or talk to people and say and ask them how likely they would be to buy this particular product at certain prices, et cetera. So that's you know, that's the kind of research I could do. Another one is that people often overlook is what I would call similar markets. Let me give you an example there. We're trying to project in our current company the size and the growth rate of the podcasting market, number of podcasts that there will be, and then get into how to advertise on podcasts, things like that. Well, you know, again, what the heck's a podcast? I mean, people don't know what they are in terms of doing research. And, yeah, there's probably some analysts out there, but I wouldn't necessarily trust their data anyway because it's just too new a market. Now, one way to look at it is to go back and look at blogs. So blogs had a lot in common with podcasts. They are one-way or two-way communications. They went through the early adopter phase already. Now they're in the growth phase because, you know, it's pretty straightforward to get a blog. It's actually free in most cases. So they have their little S-curve, and what we can do is almost plot podcasts versus blogs and say, well, maybe they'll be as popular or less popular or whatever, but it'll give us an idea of the adoption curve, how quickly that they'll be adopted, how many podcasts there would be versus blogs, so we can look at similar markets, and that's a very concrete example. Then you want to look at it the other way. Now, forget the market for a second. Let's go bottoms up, okay? In that case, you want to look at some very simple things. The first one is availability. It may sound kind of stupid, but do you actually have your own product? Well, if I'm selling toothbrushes, okay, and I want to open up a new electronic toothbrush, and I want to sell that, well, it may take me 6 months to develop the product, and then I have manufacturing issues, and I may literally not have the product, or I may have only so much capacity to produce that product. Another one in a restaurant, availability. If I've only got 20 tables, I've only got 20 tables. I'm constrained. At some point, it doesn't matter how big the market is for my restaurant. I've only got 20 tables. So that's the ability the product to be available and the ability to serve, meaning to serve that product. But also part of serving might be selling. So again, let's take this example of the electric toothbrushes. By the way, I don't know why the heck I picked that one, but anyway. If in order to sell electric toothbrushes, I would have to go through distribution channels. I would have to get into to pharmacies, right? I'd have to get into to Walmarts. I'd have to get into other types of stores. Maybe I have to do it online. I mean, I basically have to sell the product to somebody. Well, I'm constrained by the number of salespeople I have. So I really couldn't even serve that market because I'm constrained based on the number of people. Okay, then you want to look at of the market I can serve and that is available to me. Again, you go back to what's the growth of that market, who are the likely buyers, and eventually what's my market share within that market. So you've done a bottoms up and top down, and hopefully they meet in the middle. If they don't meet in the middle, you have to look at your assumptions on both sides. They should meet. No, you don't have to go crazy and put and make them exact. But to prove it to yourself, you should be able to see from the top down and from a bottom up that the numbers make sense. Okay. Now, the other thing, oh, by the way, I should mention this because I had a student do this in one project. So they handed in their market sizing because I my class I sort of as you go through this course, if you were actually taking my course right now at Carnegie Mellon, you would be writing sections of your eventual business plan with your own company. All the people in the class quote start their own company. So I got one on somebody handed it in and they showed me the top down and the bottom up in the business in their section of the business plan, and I said, guys, no, you don't want to do this, and they were kind of lost. I said, but this is what you taught us. I said, yeah, but look at what you just did. I'm a reader of your business plan, and you just gave me two different numbers. Well, first of all, I'm only going to look at the lower one. Second of all, I'm getting worried here because you guys don't have one set of numbers. You got two sets of numbers. So you want to do both analyses, but then you want to prove to yourself what you believe the right numbers are, and then obviously go ahead and make one model that takes into account the top-down and the bottom-up and comes up with your projections. Other considerations on your market, this, believe it or not, people forget this one, competition. When I was at Four Systems, in the market was called the ATM market, people were forecasting the market to be $1 billion in about 3 years or so after we started. And there were all these companies out there who joined the ATM market. Okay, I mean big companies. I mean Cisco, AT&T, Northern Telecom, which is now called Nortel, Alcatel, Siemens. I mean big companies. They built their own internal business plans, and they saw these billion-dollar numbers. And each of them, of course, said, "Well, we can get whatever 15-20% of the market." Well, if you added up all the business plans in the market, including ours at Four Systems, you probably got four times the size of the market. And then 3 years later, there were all these analyst reports came out saying, well, the market didn't meet expectations. Sure it did. The market was fine. It's just a lot of companies didn't meet their expectations because they forgot about the fact that there was competition and they were going to be potentially 2 years late to market and they were not going to get 20 or 30% of the market. Okay, in this market, the segment we were in, we had 70% market share the first 2 years of the market. 70% market share as a startup. Well, they didn't count us in as competition. Okay? So you have to remember that there's other people out there. Again, your restaurant business. There's other restaurants. There's McDonald's. There's the Chinese place down the corner. There's the Italian place. There's the Indian place. Just because you have a restaurant with really good food doesn't mean everybody's going to jump and come to your restaurant. Okay, so you have to consider the competition. The other thing, and this is really getting into marketing, but I mention here for a reason, is while you're thinking of your target market, you should in the back of your mind be thinking to yourself, how am I going to reach these people with my message? So am I going to reach them over the internet? Are there conferences or trade shows out there? Are there other products that might be similar to mine that I could tag along with? You know, things like that. So you want to consider those things because if you can't reach people and there's no obvious way for them to get the information, it's going to be obviously more difficult for you to to grow. Okay, well, that's it for today's class. And again, I certainly invite you to go ahead and listen to all of the classes. There will be quite a number of these over the course of the semester and probably beyond. I've also decided I'm going to do some interviews of some entrepreneurs, which I won't be doing in the class. If you want to send me an email, do so at Jules, J-U-L-E-S, at talkshoe.com. Check out my website where I've got the companion materials at talkshoe.com/Professor Giuliano. And I have a blog, which is professorgiuliano.blogspot.com, which is on Blogger. Okay, that's it for today. Please join me live and ask questions. I want to make this as interactive as possible. Until the next class, this is Mark signing off.